Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As I continue to look for more ways to fulfill my pledge to provide the information you need to make informed choices about your health and wellness, I've developed a simple way for you to access curated supplement protocols previously available only to patients in my private practice. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. There you'll find easy-to-follow links to not only the best individual products, but also to my brand new Intelligent Medicine Lifestyle Supplement Protocols that combine the products I recommend to achieve your specific goals, whether it be heart health, immune support, and much more. It's the easiest way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need in order to follow the Intelligent Medicine Lifestyle, and for a limited time, you'll also receive free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to Dr. Lee No. He's a naturopathic physician and author of Mitochondria in the Future of Medicine, The Key to Understanding Disease, Chronic Illness, Aging, and Life Itself, because the mitochondria are so central to so many bodily processes. So what are some of the conditions that are thought to be associated with mitochondrial dysfunction? And how might our listeners assess whether they themselves suffer from mitochondrial dysfunction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And unfortunately, it doesn't have an easy answer. But what we're starting to realize as we start to investigate the importance of the mitochondria in human health is that if I could generalize, and of course there's always exceptions when it comes to biology, but if I can generalize, I would say all degenerative diseases have a component of dysfunctional mitochondria. And that's important to know because, and I even talked to a couple nonprofit organizations that are working in the field of mitochondria. One of the things that they agree is that, you know, when you look at the involvement of dysfunctional mitochondria to most age-related degenerative diseases, you know, we have things like the heart and cardiovascular health associations, and we have Alzheimer's and things like that. But one of the things that no one's really talking about is that these potentially could all be classified as a subset or a particular presentation of mitochondrial dysfunction. So you might have, you know, mitochondrial dysfunction as more of an umbrella disorder. And under that, you have things like, you know, hypertension, Alzheimer's, congestive heart failure, diabetes, chronic fatigue, and so the list goes on. But again, when you consider the underlying factor of mitochondrial dysfunction being present in all of these, you can almost look at it as an umbrella term to kind of look at where all these other conditions fall under.
Well, let's focus on diabetes and metabolic syndrome, because I've heard it said that diabetes is not a sugar disorder. It's an energetic disorder. Can you explain?
Yeah. And so one of the things that we're starting to hear a lot more, as you said, is that we're starting to hear that this is more of a metabolic disorder. And so we're starting to place less emphasis on things like the endocrine system. And I know when in conventional medicine, we typically look at when you're diagnosed with diabetes, you go to your endocrinologist and you're assessed by a specialist in hormones. But what we're starting to see is that diabetes is predominantly a metabolic disorder. So once you start to look at it from that perspective and you start treating it from that perspective, we've actually seen, at least in some smaller clinical studies, that we can actually cure diabetes. And this is huge news, at least when I came across these smaller preliminary studies. I thought it was mind blowing, because for the first time, we're really kind of changing people's perspective on what we thought was an incurable disease. So to kind of give you the details on this, I'll also mention that we haven't definitively kind of nailed down exactly how this works, but it's thought to occur something like this, where if you consume too many calories, especially, you know, rapidly metabolized calories, things like simple sugars, our muscles' mitochondria really ramp up in their metabolism. And when you ramp up their metabolism, you create an excess amount of these free radicals that we talked about earlier. And over time, the function and the quality of the mitochondria within the muscles start to deteriorate. And when that happens, it's no longer able to burn fats efficiently. And so what happens then is fats start to build up in the cells of the muscles. And this, in turn, causes a reduction in insulin sensitivity. So basically what we need now is a greater amount of insulin to get that same response. So when you look at the organ that's responsible for producing insulin, which is the pancreas, you need to increase the metabolic rate of the pancreas to be able to produce, package, and secrete a higher amount of insulin that's required by these muscles. And so over time, when you ramp up the metabolism in the pancreatic beta cells, again, the mitochondria are eventually going to burn out and not be able to produce the energy that's required to make sure that there's sufficient amounts of insulin. And then what ends up happening in longstanding untreated diabetes is you have a drop off in insulin, and that's because the pancreas isn't able to meet that demand. So when you look at this chain of events and you understand the role of the mitochondria, you can kind of take a metabolic approach to treating diabetes. And like I said, in a few preliminary studies, small studies that we've seen so far, we can actually reverse that process.
What happens to the brain when the mitochondria aren't functioning well?
Yeah, so and this there's a lot of research or excitement around this with respect, more specifically with respect to things like Alzheimer's. And you might have heard Alzheimer's be referred to as type 3 diabetes, which is essentially what we're looking at is insulin resistance in the brain. So the brain cannot use its primary source of fuel, which is blood glucose. And in fact, blood glucose is so important for brain function that, you know, our bodies regulate blood levels of sugar essentially to make sure that the brain has a constant supply of blood sugar. But in a situation where there's insulin resistance and the brain isn't able to use that blood sugar, then we need to kind of switch gears and look at an alternative source of fuel. So as long as that alternative source of fuel is there, the brain can start to work better. And what we've seen in a number of different cases is and mind you, these are anecdotes, but there is a lot of promise behind this, is that there are individuals that have reported, you know, pretty advanced stages of Alzheimer's where they're essentially dependent on others for day-to-day life. And all they do is go through a nutritional ketogenic diet and allow the brain to switch fuels from blood glucose to ketones. And because they're able to use ketones as a source of fuel, these brain cells essentially wake up and start to function normally again. And these individuals can start to live a more normal life, I guess, if that's something that we can see, you know, where they're almost self-sufficient again. And that's really just because they've switched fuel sources in the brain.
Well, you're echoing the sentiments of one of our recent guests, who's Dr. Sarah Myhill, who specializes in treating chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, who has advocated a paleo ketogenic diet. And so how does that work? The preferred substrate or fuel of the mitochondria is fat derived. It's the ketone bodies.
Right. So so glucose is an easily metabolized source of fuel, and it's quite rapid in its our ability to kind of utilize it. But the preferred source of fuel in the body under normal circumstances are fatty acids, and that's because they are so dense in energy. Gram per gram, fatty acids have a lot more energy. But in certain, like I said, under certain circumstances, the body can't use glucose. So what ends up happening is our bodies shift really to burning fats. And one of the byproducts of burning fats are ketones. So you not only get, you know, the energy released from the burning of fats, but these ketone bodies then can be used as a source of fuel for certain tissues in the body, like I said, the brain.
Other conditions that might be related to this, you mentioned hearing loss, infertility, even wrinkles. Is that correct?
Yeah, and this is the incredible thing, is that there are so many different health conditions that have been linked back to dysfunctional mitochondria. And in the research that I was doing when I was writing the book, I had so many more health conditions that I wanted to include, and that should have got its way into the book. But, you know, at some point I had to draw the line in the sand and say to myself, okay, I have to stop researching and actually start writing the book. But so many more things
left on the cutting room floor, so to speak.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, and my whole interest in the mitochondria, you mentioned infertility, actually started out with infertility. And this was back, the first edition of this book was published back in 2014. And just prior to that, a few years earlier, I was working for a supplement company that had a particularly well-absorbed form of coenzyme Q10. And this was used by doctors and medical clinics and even hospitals. And one of the things at this time, we started to see fertility clinics start using CoQ10 mm-hmm. in their yep. infertile female patients. And this was based out of some animal studies that showed CoQ10 could kind of rescue aging oocytes or eggs and make them fertile again. And based on this, a lot of fertility clinics started to recommend CoQ10. I was invited into one particular clinic to do a presentation for doctors and nurses to kind of help them understand why they should be recommending CoQ10 to their patients. And it was in the research of preparing for this presentation that I really developed an appreciation for mitochondria, and that's where my interest really developed, because that's when I started to realize it was far more important than I had ever been taught in school, and it was involved in so many more things than just energy production, and it was linked to so many more conditions other than, you know, your typical things like, you know, cardiovascular disease. So yeah, it was really that area that really kind of galvanized my interest in this whole topic.
Well, let's move now to some solutions, because you mentioned coenzyme Q10. Are there other supplements that might be of particular value?
The ones that I really like to kind of point out, so CoQ10, I think, is probably one of the foundational supplements when it comes to mitochondria health. The others are magnesium, especially when you consider that most people are not consuming anywhere near the required amount of magnesium on a daily basis. Magnesium is incredibly important for many different processes involved in the energy-making pathways, but it's actually a component of ATP itself. So when we talk about ATP as the energy molecule, we're really talking about magnesium ATP. And as I mentioned, all sorts of different proteins require magnesium as a cofactor. So without enough magnesium, energy production is really compromised. The other one is D-ribose. D-ribose is a building block of the adenosine molecule, which is, you know, the basis behind adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, the energy molecule. So, you know, consuming or supplementing with D-ribose is particularly important and more important under certain circumstances, especially right now with the popularity of things like the ketogenic diet, where you're really reducing your carbohydrate intake. My personal opinion is that D-ribose is a much more of an important supplement to take for those individuals than other individuals that might still be consuming a fair amount of carbohydrates and, you know, allowing your body to have the building blocks to make things like D-ribose. But that, you know, different B vitamins are also important, in particular vitamin B3. And there is a newer form called nicotinamide riboside, which is one step further along in the pathway to create NAD plus, which is the whole reason why niacin and vitamin B3 in general is such an important B vitamin for our mitochondria health. But there's B2, B12, and the list goes on. I mean, like I said, there's a number of different nutrients that I cover in my book, but even that is not a comprehensive list. There's so many more nutrients out there and so many more substances that we can take that optimize the function of mitochondria that just never made it into my book.
You do mention resveratrol and something a little less well-known that's also from grapes, I believe, tyrosteel bean.
Right. Yeah, so these are different compounds that are found in different botanical sources. Resveratrol is mostly you know, or became famous because of its inclusion in red wine. So for a while, we thought that whole French paradox phenomenon that that your listeners might be familiar with was attributed to resveratrol. And then terastilbene is a newer compound that's been making some headlines, and that is a sister compound to resveratrol. It is found in grapes in a very small amount, but its primary source, I believe, are blueberries. And one of the reasons blueberries have gained, you know, the superfood reputation. But these nutrients or compounds essentially activate a gene called or a class of genes called sirtuins, which kind of activate a number of different genes that allow our bodies to adapt and become stronger and more resilient. And actually, it has been shown to extend things like lifespan and health span. So a lot of interesting research going on with not just nutrients in the sense of vitamins and minerals, but also phytochemicals such as resveratrol, terastilbene, and a number of others.
How about this one? And this is a tongue twister. Let me see if I can get it right. It's pyrrolquinoline quinone, which is other, you know, abbreviated PQQ. That's on the radar screen for some practitioners who are early adopters.
Right. Yeah, and it's always easier just to say PQQ than the longer name. But that's an interesting molecule as well. So at one point, we thought that this could be classified as a vitamin. Newer research has shown that has thrown that into question. But we do see from early research that it does have a number of benefits to the mitochondria. And I think this was the first nutrient to show something called mitochondrial biogenesis. So with that, as you could probably guess from that term, essentially what that means is that we're creating more mitochondria. And the benefit of something like this is that the more mitochondria you have in a cell, the more energy you're able to produce. And of course, the more energy you're able to produce, the better everything works in the cell. And that's, you know, that's a great thing, because prior to seeing this happen with just ingestion of PQQ, we thought that the only way to induce mitochondrial biogenesis was physical activity and or extreme calorie restriction. Mm-hmm. So now we see that there's the potential to induce the generation of more mitochondria just by consuming a particular nutrient. And I should also mention that things like nicotinamide riboside has also been shown to have a very similar effect in the sense that it helps our bodies produce more mitochondria. But PQQ was exciting because it was the first one to show that, and also has a number of other benefits unrelated to mitochondria.
Alpha lipoic acid?
Yeah, that is something I should have mentioned earlier as well, because this is not only an excellent antioxidant in the sense that it's both water soluble and fat soluble, so it can kind of cross the mitochondrial membrane, so it has an antioxidant benefit directly right in the matrix. But it's also one of those nutrients that can help balance the ratio of NAD plus to NADH, so the redox pair of NAD. And this is important because that's the ratio and the availability of NAD plus has an incredible impact on a number of different cellular processes, including energy production, but also kind of helps us gauge the health of, so going back to our talk earlier about, you know, looking at different things that could gauge our health of the mitochondria, looking at the ratio of NAD plus to NADH could be one of those nutrients that we look at to kind of give us an indication as to how healthy our mitochondria are. But there's a number of other benefits to alpha-lipoic acid, that we see as well. So that's the other thing I should also mention, is that all these nutrients do have an impact to the mitochondria, but also have other health benefits.
And something that figures in the metabolism of ATP, the energy molecule, is creatine. Any place for that?
Yes, and creatine is one of those nutrients that for a very long time, and probably still, is seen as a sports nutrition supplement.
For muscle heads, right.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, when you look at the science and the research that's been done, we see studies on all sorts of different degenerative chronic diseases. And so when you consider the benefit of creatine and its function as a source of energy and a source of the phosphates that that build the ATP, we're starting to see benefits to also, like I said, all sorts of different degenerative diseases, including cognitive health. We're starting to see studies on creatine for things like Alzheimer's.
So it's not just for jocks, it's also for eggheads.
That's right, exactly, yeah.
Could make you smarter. and coming out of left field, and you do give it a mention in your book, phytocannabinoids. What's up with that?
Right. So this is, so phytocannabinoids are just cannabinoids from plant sources. And that differs from our endocannabinoids. So, when I say phytocannabinoids, most people will think of cannabis. So things like THC, CBD. And what's really interesting is that so the endocannabinoid system is seen as a master regulator of homeostasis or balance within the body. And one of the things that we've seen more recently is that our mitochondria actually have cannabinoid receptors. Hmm. So what we're seeing is that the endocannabinoid system can actually have an impact on our mitochondria or our metabolism via way of the mitochondria. So there's a lot of it, an early field right now. There is an incredibly extensive body of knowledge right now, but we're starting to see that there is a lot of interest around this, because when we start to kind of look at the benefits of cannabinoids to different processes and trying to understand why they work in the way they work, the mitochondria might be that link that connects cannabinoids to metabolism and other aspects of health.
Okay, well, this is a fascinating topic, and I highly recommend your book as a primer for people who want to do a deep dive on the subject of mitochondria. I think it's of utmost importance in the field of nutrition, and you can get some real practical recommendations for how to combat any particular condition you have. But as well, you know, just as a general anti-aging elixir, this is, I think, really where it's at when it comes to therapeutic nutritional interventions. You can also see a fascinating interview with today's guest, Dr. Lee No, on Dr. McCullough. YouTube Dr. Lee No, and that YouTube video with Dr. McCullough will come up. That was done in February. And tell us about your website.
So my website is just leeno.com. LeeKNOW.com. That's probably the best way to see details of my book, as well as contact me if there's any reason you want to reach out. You can also follow me on Twitter, which is LeeNo3D, and that's another way that a lot of people do reach out to me and connect with me. So those are the two best ways to get in touch with me and follow what I'm doing.
Well, I'll follow you immediately on Twitter.
Thank you.
Great. Good stuff. Thank you so much, and thanks for all the dedicated work you did, because, I mean, clearly you're doing your homework on a subject that is really emerging as, I think, one of the central paradigms that we have in this field. So congratulations to you, Dr. No.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.